When a banker is not a trustee, if a bank borrower transfers to the banker certain shares in a money company as collateral security and the transfer is duly registered in the books of issuing company, no trust is created in respect of these shares and the bank's position remains as a pledgee rather than a trustee. Here there is some purpose for which a transfer has happened. It is not simply deposit of those shares without any consideration. In New Bank of India versus Union of India, the Delhi High Court observed that a trustee is not generally entitled to dispose of or appropriate the trust property for his benefit. Whatever transactions are happening has to happen for the benefit of the beneficiary. In the present case, the banker was entitled to dispose of the shares and utilize the amount thereof for adjustment to the loan amount if the debtor defaults. If the banker's obligation to transfer back the shares can arise, then only when the debtor clears dues to the bank, such obligation to transfer back the shares will arise. Hence, the bank's obligation to transfer back the shares can arise only when the debtor clears dues to the bank. The bank was not considered as a trustee in this particular case. So again, it boils down to the basic instruction given by the beneficiary and the purpose for which such transaction happens during the course of banking business. Now we move on to the next special type of relationship, which is a bailee and a bailer. A bailment is the delivery of goods by one person to another for some purpose. When the purpose is accomplished, whatever the deposit is made of goods has to be returned or otherwise disposed of according to the directions of the person delivering them. When a bank gives loan against collateral security, it takes physical possession of the securities. Can the bank treat those securities as its own and keep it forever? No. The banker has to give back the securities taken from the borrower once the borrower repays the loan in full. The banker can never claim the ownership right for life. It is deposited for some purpose and has to be given back to the borrower once the purpose is accomplished. Banks also keep articles, valuables, securities, etc. of its customer in safe custody, as we had seen in the previous slide, and acts as a bailee. Here bailee specifically means delivery of goods by one person, which is most generally the customer, to another person, which is a banker, for some purpose. That some purpose can be either to keep it for safety or for security, backing a loan granted by the banker to the borrower. As a bailee, the bank is required to take care of the goods bailed. The banker cannot say, okay, you just keep and I will do whatever I want. Sorry. The banker has to take all reasonable care whenever it accepts any such goods to be kept in its custody and has to take all necessary care, treating as if it is taking care of its own property. Otherwise, the bank violates the basic agreement of a bailer and a bailee and will be liable for negligence and the customer can file a case for damages or claiming damages against the bank. After we see the Bailey-Bailer relationship, which is a special type of relationship, let's move on to a next special type of relationship, which is a lessor and a lessee. The best example to give of a lessor and lessee is of a safe deposit vault. In case of safe custody, you simply deposit whatever security items, whereas in safe deposit vault, you are actually using some space within the banking premises, that some space may be in the form of a vault, which is operated jointly by the customer as well as the banker. It's a two key operation. You cannot open the locker with only one key. There are certain terms and conditions to be followed both by the banker as well as the customer, but such a relationship is termed as the lessor and the lessee, since the bank hires its small space of its branch, it will be called a lessor, and since the customer takes the benefit of that space, he will be called as a lessee. While providing the safe deposit vault or a locker facility to their customers, bank enters into an agreement with the customer, which is called a special relationship of a lessor and lessee. The relationship between the bank and the customer is that of a lessor and lessee. Banks lease, which means hires the lockers to their customer, obviously for some rent, their immovable property to the customer, which is in the form of small lockers, and give them the right to enjoy such property during the specified period, that is during the office banking hours, and charge rentals. So banker gains a fee income, customer gets some space, a secure space within the branch premises. One more type of special relationship, banker acts as a custodian. Bank takes legal responsibility, becomes caretaker for a customer's security. While opening a demat account, bank becomes a custodian. We have seen a demat account is open specifically for keeping electronic securities. These electronic securities are in fact maintained by a depository. Bank acts as an agent of the depository, and hence it simply acts as a custodian, especially when it holds the demat securities in the electronic form. Agent of a customer. When a banker buys or sells securities on behalf of his customer, he performs an agency function. Similarly, a very popular case of collection. A banker collects checks, dividends, bills, or promissory notes on his customer's behalf. He acts as an agent, because collecting a check to be realized from some other bank has nothing to do with the debtor-creditor relationship. It's a special type of relationship, which is an agency relationship. The bank acts as an agent for accomplishing a specific purpose, which is collection of money from the drawee bank and bringing it back to the account of its customer. The banker may also act in various other agency capacities, such as a trustee, attorney, executor, correspondent, or a representative. In Faroes Bank Limited case, it was held that a bank on receiving a check for collection from its customer is his agent, as we have seen in the previous slide. Until the check is cleared and its amount actually realized. So the purpose of accomplishment is till the realization of the check, and if before such clearance and realization the bank lawfully suspends its business, then the debtor-creditor relationship does not spring up. The agency continues and the amount impressed with trust. Limitation under Limitation Act. What do you mean by limitation? Like, you cannot have your right for life. Otherwise, it will become very difficult to actually investigate or produce certain evidence. Hence, Limitation Act has specified certain time periods within which you have to file cases in case of disputes, specifically in a court of law. The time for filing a suit for recovery of money deposited by a customer with his banker when it is payable on demand is 3 years from the date of demand. With regard to fixed deposits, the production of the receipt is the nature of a demand, and the period of limitation for filing a suit for recovery of deposit, if refused by the banker, will be 3 years from the date the receipt is produced. If you fail to file a suit within this 3 years, then the suit becomes time barred. It won't be entertained in the court of law. You will have to go for alternate remedies. An important feature of relationship is that the period of limitation does not begin till a demand is made by the customer. So the origination point is the demand. The law in India on the subject is contained in Article 22 of the Limitation Act 1963, which provides a period of 3 years from the time when the demand is made by the customer. The account may continue for whatever period, but the time will start running when the demand is made by the customer. Under Section 26 of the Banking Regulation Act 1949, banking companies have to submit an annual return of all accounts which have not been operated for 10 years. This specifically keeps a track for all those non-operated accounts. There is a specific process for dealing with such non-operated accounts in order to avoid various misappropriation of frauds into the account. If the money is deposited for a fixed period, the period of 10 years will be calculated from the date of expiry of such fixed period, because a fixed deposit is kept for a particular period, whereas a demand deposit, you can make demand anytime. Hence, the limitation period will start running from the date of expiry of such fixed deposit. If the customer has given a notice to the banker to withdraw his deposit after a specified time, the limitation period will begin to run from the expiry of the specified time. If the return of the deposit receipt is made a condition to the withdrawal of the money, its return fixes the starting point of the period of limitation. We have another case of Motigoni versus and Aranji. With regards to an overdraft, this is a special case because we generally talk about deposits and loan, but the moment your account is overdrawn, an overdraft is created. That means the account is withdrawn in spite of having insufficient or no balance in the account. The period runs from the time the overdraft is made use of unless it is extended by the acknowledgement of debt in writing. So this is a special feature in keeping the time alive. The moment an acknowledgement of the debt happens, we see the letter of acknowledgement is again is provided under the Limitation Act, a fresh lease of life is granted from the date of letter of acknowledgement of the debt, but this letter of acknowledgement has to be in writing. It has to be signed by the debtor or his agent, or another way is to make a part payment of such outstanding in the handwriting of the debtor or his agent, which means he has to make the payment by filling some deposit paying slip, sign on that. So that can also be amounting to an acknowledgement of the debt. The reason is the overdraft granted by a banker is a loan and not money deposited with the banker. So friends, we have to keep a note of application of this Limitation Act based on the type of facility. We have to first decide whether it is a deposit account or a loan account, and accordingly the time of limitation has to be calculated. In First National Bank Limited versus Industrial Oil, where a customer delivers to the bank bills along with demand drafts for collection from specific persons and the money is also collected by the bank, what happens to such money? It holds such money as a trustee for the customer, and in the event of the suspension of business of the bank, the customer is entitled to opt in the payment of the full amount of the money so collected. National Bank of Lahore versus Sohanlal Saigal and others, where the lockers were tampered, the safe deposit lockers were tampered with and valuables kept therein were removed. What happens in such case? The suit of recovery of the value of contents of the locker will not be barred by the Limitation Act because it is a totally separate special case. State Bank of India versus Kashmir Art Printing Press and others. The period of limitation for a suit for a balance due on mutual, open and current account where there have been reciprocal demands between the parties shall be 3 years from the closing of the year in which the last item admitted or proved is entered in the account. So this specifically pinpoints, even if you don't find exact replica of a particular situation in the Limitation Act, we can always take help of the decided case laws and try to relate your specific case and arrive at the time for limitation. Where a customer of a bank draws a check on the bank knowing that the funds at his credit are insufficient to meet it, but expecting the bank nevertheless to honor it, he impliedly applies to the bank for an overdraft or a loan. It is clear cut assumed. Each such transaction is an independent loan, and the limitation for recovery for which runs from the date of each loan. So this has to be kept. There are various transactions happening, so it runs from the date of each loan. A.R. Krishnaswamy Iyer versus M.N. Ramakrishna Iyer. A payment of check made by a debtor in favor of a creditor is a payment which satisfies condition of section 20 of Indian Limitation Act. So what was done in this case? A payment of check made by a debtor in favor of a creditor is a payment. It satisfies section 20 of the Indian Limitation Act. And what does that mean? The period of the limitation is to be calculated from the last payment of the check. In case of post-dated checks, the payment for the purpose of section 20 can only be on the date which the check bears and cannot be the date on which the check is handed over. So we have clear-cut provisions for arriving at the limitation period. Now we come to the final part. Whenever a relationship is entered, there are inbuilt options in either voluntarily terminating the relationship, or each one of them has a right to demand termination of relationship. So we can say the banker-custom relationship can be terminated in two ways. The first one is voluntary termination, and the second one is by operation of law. What do you mean by voluntary termination? The customer has a right to close a current account on demand which has to be met. The banker cannot say, no, I cannot close your account. The moment the demand is made, the banker has no right to stop the closure. It has to immediately act. Some banks have typical deadlines of closing the account on the same day. Some banks may have the closure to be done within 3 days, within 7 days, but you cannot delay it beyond a particular period. A customer can decide to close his account at the will without notice to the banker. It's customer's right. Whenever the customer wants, he can make a demand, maybe on his own standard letter or maybe in a specified format, satisfying all the conditions that are required for closure or termination of the account. The customer can withdraw the entire amount from his account, but this does not imply his intention to close the account. Please note, withdrawing the entire amount is one case, closure of account is another case. Withdrawal of amount does not amount to termination of relationship, even though the balance may be zero. Whereas closure of account specifically means instructions given by the customer to simply close his account in its books of accounts, for which the customer has to give a written notice for the closure of account. The banker cannot act orally for such voluntary terminations. Sometimes a customer becomes a nuisance, like he keeps on overdrawing. His checks are returned. He does not maintain minimum balances as agreed between the banker and the customer. It's a constant failure to honor an overdraft agreement. Keeps on drawing checks above his limits. Or he draws checks without providing funds for meeting them, or issues post-dated checks. It's a great nuisance for the banker as well as to those whose checks are bounced. In such cases, it is prudent for the banker to tell the customer to make some other arrangement. Otherwise, the banker's goodwill can also be at stake. The customers around or the affected parties around will consider a banker encouraging such defaulting customers. Hence, bank don't tolerate such nuisance. Bank immediately issues a notice to the customer asking him to make good for the arrangements or maintain a proper conduct for operation of the account. In case the customer fails to comply with the notice issued by the banker for regularizing his account, the bank can go to the extent of closing his account, remit the balance if any in such circumstances, but such closure has to be done after issuing a proper notice to the customer, making clear mention of the reasons, giving him an opportunity of regularizing the account, and in spite of that, if the customer does not pay any heed, then the banker has a right to close the account after the notice period has expired. The banker also has a right to determine the relationship if he does not wish to continue his relationship with the customer. He should give a reasonable notice to a customer informing him about determination of relationship. In this, the banker should give the customer time to make other arrangements. The bank, by closing the account, saves the bank from having to return the checks already issued by the customer and stop such embarrassments for those customers whose checks are returned for whatever reasons. The second way of terminating relationship is by operation of law. We will see various ways under which the relationship can be terminated by operation of law. The regulations come into the picture. The first one is whenever there is a death of the customer. As soon as the banker receives the intimation about the death of the customer, he should stop all payments. Otherwise, the banker would be held liable. Banker is not supposed to pay any payments, make any payments received after notice of death of the customer. He should stop all payments from the account. The death of his customer determines his authority to pay checks drawn on him. Hence, this is one of the termination by law, specifically arising out of the death of the customer. The second way of termination of relationship by operation of law is when the customer becomes or declares himself as a bankrupt. In case of bankruptcy, as soon as the individual customer is declared bankrupt or a company begins to be wound up, the relationship ends immediately. The bank cannot pay checks drawn by the customer, and all balances with the bank thereafter accrues to the receiver or the liquidator or the official assignee. So the moment the winding up happens, whoever is the official receiver will be receiving all the proceeds of the assets and appropriating towards all the liabilities. The third way of termination of relationship by operation of law is when the customer becomes insane, insanity. A person who is not of sound mind can never become competent to contract. The contract becomes void as soon as it is executed by an insane person. On receipt of intimation of insanity of customer, what does this mean? The customer was sound when the account was opened. But after the account was opened, for whatever reason, the customer becomes insane and the banker receives a notice of such insanity of the customer, the banker has to immediately stop payment of checks issued by the client. Otherwise, again, the banker would be held liable if he passes any checks received after the notice of insanity. Also, the existing mandate becomes revoked when the banker comes to know the mental state of his client. The fourth mode of operation, termination of relationship by operation of law is the garnishee order. As we had seen earlier, a garnishee order is issued by a court. A complainant files a case against the customer of a bank and the court sends a notice to the bank asking explanations why such amount of the customer he is having in his bank should not be paid to the complainant who has filed a case against the customer of the bank in the court. If the court issues an order known as a garnishee order to close an account, the banker cannot say, no, I have to ask the customer. It has to immediately act as per the instructions of the garnishee order, provided he is given a fair, reasonable period for explaining his whatever way of appropriating, maybe a lien or loan amount, whatever. But after that, he has to act on the basis of the court instructions. So friends, we are concluding this banker-custom relationship. It's a very important chapter because we have seen various evolution of banking, then we saw various structures of banking, then we saw who is a customer, what are the regulatory norms to accept anybody as a customer. We have seen various KYC norms, but that's not enough. Once an agreement happens between a customer and a banker agrees to accept a customer based on whatever KYC norms, in addition to the normal contractual terms and conditions, the banker also has to act as a normal person, to treat the customer as a person, give him all type of products and services, but no such product or services should be in violation of the terms and conditions accepted by the customer. More specifically about those conditions, which specifically mentions that whenever a demand is made, it has to be made at a specified time, at a specified place. If during those period, if the banker accommodates or entertains such customer, then he has to face the consequences in case of any problems arising out of such transactions. The banker has to be very sweet, very polite in giving services to the customer, but on the back of his mind, he also has to remember that he is handling money deposited by the customer, and that deposit is made on a trust that whatever money he is going to keep with him, he is going to take full care, and this full care can happen only when he takes care about various regulations. The customer-banker relationship is the most important foundation for the development of every bank. On one side, the bank has to keep in mind the regulations. On the other side, the bank also has to give certain accommodations to the customer. It cannot always put the finger on the rule book, but at the same time, see that the compliance is made within time. Once established, the relationship often continues for a longer term. Because whenever a customer opens an account with the bank, he has no intention of changing his banker unless and until the banker gives a very bad service. And the bad service comes into the picture when the banker does not try to understand the customer, does not understand the needs of the customer, does not give him the products and services that are required by the customer, harasses the customer for complying with various rules and regulations, then only the customer will try to think of any other banker. But if the banker gives him whatever required within the framework of banking products and services, then such banker-customer relationship will grow for a longer tenure. The special position held by the bank and the size of their activities makes it essential to develop a healthy and a harmonious banker-customer relationship for generating customer loyalty, which ultimately culminates into profits. So the banker tries to understand the consumer behavior. The banker tries to use its marketing strategies to reach out to the customer to tell them what the offerings are. Finally, the customer comes to the branch or uses the automated channels and picks the best that is offered by the banker, satisfies his need, and the relationship is strengthened. Some moments of customer delight going more than whatever is promised in the products and services makes a great impact on the banker-customer relationship. And whenever the customer is having a super relationship with the banker is bound to make profits, and it's a win-win situation for the banker as well as the customer. That ends the chapter. Thank you very much.